at the races. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full-service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is running like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
Racing fans, come join us for great racing and good times this weekend.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Second half on this, what is it? It's Thursday. You understand my inability to keep track of the days, given the constant travel that's gone on. But yeah, it's Thursday, and it's a little after 10:30, which means this is horse racing time. It's Saratoga special time. And speaking of Saratoga special time, I think I saw a tweet. I think I saw a putty cat. I think I saw a tweet that yesterday or the day before, 100 days to Saratoga. Tom Law, it's a home game coming soon.
It sure is. I was out for my morning walk today, and I walked right by Saratoga Racecourse, and seemed to be like a lot of construction down there on Union Avenue. I think they're doing something with some sidewalks or some bike lanes. But yeah, only 98 days now. I think it was 100. I don't know. I told somebody yesterday it was 99. So I made it sound like I was counting the days, I guess. But I guess we're all counting the days to Saratoga. At least we should be.
Well, and in fact, I just seeing a question from our friend Leslie Knopf asking about the opening of the Oklahoma, and I think it's pretty soon because I saw where Chad Brown, tweeted the other morning that he and his people were up at the barn getting set up. So I think the Oklahoma is opening at any moment.
Yeah, I mean, typically it used to always be April 15th to November 15th, and that would actually make sense this year. I mean, the 15th is a Saturday, so I think for the last few years, they've kind of tried to have it, you know, maybe move-in day was Friday or Thursday or Friday for horses, and then training would start, you know, a day or two later. So with it being the 15th, it seems to be a perfect day for opening day at the Oklahoma. It'll be, you know... I'm in Saratoga now. It's, you know, about 50 degrees and a little gray, and it was a little rainy last night. I imagine it'll be a similar day to that, but hopefully it'll be nicer. We'll see.
Well, we're certainly heading in that direction. These are always a little iffy. You know, we're going to open here tomorrow at Keeneland, and
yeah,
it's going to be a little. It feels like it's going to be a little chilly and rough, but that'll give way. Pretty quickly.
So I was going to ask you if you're at Keeneland.
I am. I
saw that you won another award yesterday. Have you been talking about that the whole show? I apologize.
No.
I only caught the Michael Blowen part.
Well, Michael actually joined me last night. Lenny Shulman was going to come, and Lenny bowed out at the last minute. He was a gate scratch because of the storm that was coming through. He's got, Lenny's got the two dogs. He's got he's got the one dog that apparently is the George Burns of dogs. That is 106, and so and the other
freak out with the storm.
Yes.
Yeah.
I guess the other one freaks out over storms. So anyway, Lenny at the last minute said, "Listen, this storm's going to come through, and they've had terrible storms here." So Lenny bowed out, but Michael Blowen had threatened to come, and sure enough, he shows up. So Michael Blowen sat with me, and Frank Angst was at the table with Frank.
Nice.
And with the Harrises that bred Epicenter. It was just a delightful evening. Let me tell you about this place. It's not a restaurant. It's a catering event hall. I shouldn't even use the word hall. It's a absolutely gorgeous facility called the Apiary. As in a beekeeping. In a beekeeping context. And beautiful rooms and garden and main room, and then apparently downstairs you couldn't get to the basement, but Diana Baker tells me that downstairs there's a gorgeous room. She told me about who it is that's running it and who conceived of it. The food was exquisite. This was really nice. This used to be a luncheon that would then be followed by a day at the races, apparently.
It was at the race. I went to Sean and Joe won the same award that you won
back in
2015.
Of course they did.
I went with them. I was their plus one, I guess. They were each other's plus one, but I was able to sneak in and we went. We had a great time. It was a lot of fun. So
it was really really nice, and I started. I didn't even get around. Michael just now regaled us with a number of stories, but I did make reference, and certainly Tom, from your days at Thoroughbred Times, you're aware of this. Organizations like the KTA and the KTOB and the KTDF, the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. I should also include Keep in this. The Kentucky Equine Education Project? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
KEEP. And the good works that these organizations do, and obviously we're talking Kentucky because we're here, but virtually every region and jurisdiction in the country that, that races has, you know, similar, you know, benefactory operations and you know, that that is doing good work in communities and outreach, etc. And there's a lot. I mean, there's a lot. There's a lot to be said in Kentucky because of how important the thoroughbred breeding and you know care and maintenance of horses is, you know, as the leading agricultural product of the state.
Yeah.
It's intrinsic.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. As you know, I was a 15-year resident of the Commonwealth, and yeah, it was. It's big business, and it's nice to see the respect that it has, kind of in the community in general. You know, I think we don't really see that around where we live here in Saratoga, just because people understand the racing and kind of the importance that it is to New York. But if you go a lot of places, you know, people kind of look at you kind of strange when you tell them you work in the horse racing business. Not in Kentucky, at least not in most of the parts that I've ever spent any amount of time in. So, you know, the horse comes first, and rightfully so. I mean, it's huge, huge economic driver in that state, for sure.
Well, and in addition, you know, in addition to the economies involved, you know, and each horse, the number, if I'm not mistaken, I've got this kind of thing sitting at my desk at home, but each horse, now I'm gonna question myself, each individual horse, I believe, generates $30,000 in economic, is it 30
yeah.
or 70? I'll find the number, but it's not just the economic driver, it's also an education and mm-hmm. and career resource and a you know, this is a lifestyle choice, obviously, and
yeah.
and that's what makes this so different and why we have to constantly explain and present the sport / industry / business because it's not like anything else. There are people obviously that get in the car and go to an office and work in the game in a capacity, but the vast majority are living it as a lifestyle.
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's no, it's 365 days a year, you know, for a ton of people. You know, and there's a lot of days, as you know, where we're doing it on Saturdays and Sundays and at night, and you know, whenever we can piece it together. I went out to Rochester. My girlfriend's son is going to go to RIT in the fall, and we drove out there last weekend for an event, open house event for new students, and driving back, you know, there were races that I had to sort of pay attention to just in case we needed to do an update for the New York Thoroughbred Breeders, you know. So you know, there's no time off. There's always something to do. 365 day a year sport, you know, unlike a lot of sports, they celebrate opening day in baseball. We don't really celebrate, we celebrate opening day at individual tracks.
Yeah, exactly. Tomorrow, you know, tomorrow right here at Keeneland.
Tomorrow's, you know, you're lucky. It's one of my, Keeneland is, you know, one of my favorite places, and I really enjoy it. I was going to go this year for the early part of the meet. And I just had a few things kind of pop up, and I wasn't able to work it out. But I was really looking forward to it. It's always great fun down there for the first couple. But I'm going to be down. I'll be down later in the meet and staying through the Derby. So looking forward to it. And then I'll be on to Pimlico, where I love the discussion of the elevator and your steps, talking about taking the escalators and the steps. I told the Clancy's about that years ago. I was like, I never take that. I haven't taken that elevator in probably years. I mean, I never take elevators anyway. If I can avoid it, you know, I got to get that elevation in, you know, I got to get ready for hiking season and running season and, you know, got to keep that heart strong, you know? So those steps are your friend.
It's just that you're not. You may be carrying some sort of a backpack. I'm carrying.
Yeah.
I'm carrying a 50-pound suitcase of radio equipment.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. So I'll concede that. Yeah, I mean, I might have a tape recorder and a program or something. You know, maybe a laptop bag, but that's about it. Yeah, but. And during the course of the day, it's, you know, up and down, but never bringing the laptop downstairs or anything like that. So I'll give you that one. I'm not envious of the guys that have to carry that equipment. Hats off to them for sure. TV guys and radio guys, support staff, et cetera.
Well,
they put in a hard day's work.
Well, as I've mentioned before, about the inclement weather too, and this is more at Derby where we're all mixed in together, you know, with the photographers, and there's nothing worse than that wet photographer smell.
Oh man, don't even get me started on that. I mean, that's the one advantage. No offense to the photographers, but the one thing I always did truly enjoy about NYRA kept the photographers in their own area. And the reporters in our own area versus, and I guess Pimlico, Maryland, they do it too. Other places, but, you know, some tracks, they're like right amongst us, you know, and it's, you know, and when they're done shooting, of course, then it's discussion time, it seems like. Not to slag on the reporters, but, you know, that's when our job starts, you know, and they seem to be done and enjoying the day and discussing, you know, aperture and all this other stuff that they deal with.
Aperture.
I went back to my college photography days. I just pulled that out of somewhere.
F-stop.
Maybe it was because I was at RIT. F-stop. RIT, and they have a big photography program there. Yeah, I guess.
Do they really?
I guess that's where it came from. But
they've got.
Yeah,
the big...
and I guess this year is significantly smaller. Space for the media. Not that people want too much inside baseball, but, you know, they tore down a big part of that parlay room because they're doing all that construction at Churchill in the backyard for the new paddock. So I guess we're going to be in an even smaller amount of space. So should be fun.
Well, the I'm anxious. Actually, I'll be over in a couple of weeks, but I'm anxious to see. How far along things are. I did see an aerial. Kevin Kirstein put up an aerial shot from above the first turn, and it you can get the sense how different it's going to be.
Right. Yeah, that looks cool. I mean, that building on the turn. I was down there for the Claim and Crown last fall and saw it. It's pretty cool. Obviously, it wasn't close to being done, but, you know, I guess they're going to do kind of a paddock area down there and the area for the owners and everything like that. Non-derby week, kind of the rest of the season. I guess they'll have something set up in the backyard for the week of the Derby and Derby Day itself. From what I understand, so
interesting.
Still, should be some areas for people to see the horses. I hope, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's just going to be 1 year, and next year, for Derby
right,
150, it'll be
that's right.
Amazing.
That's right. Yeah, no doubt. You know, they always do a great job with their facilities, for sure.
Tom Law with us. Tom, a couple minutes toward the top of the hour, and Jeff Franklin's going to join us from Thoroughgraph. But I'm anxious to get some pre-Derby thoughts from you. We just finished Florida and Arkansas, and we turn our attention to the Bluegrass, the Wood, and Santa Anita Derby. What? How is your opinion shaping up?
Well, I mean, I guess probably like a lot of people, I think the two winners from this past weekend, you know, really just kind of, I mean, Forte obviously needs no introduction as the champion, and kind of to be able to do kind of the things that he's been able to do has been impressive. And Angel of Empire as well, you know, kind of following up, going back to back stakes wins and kind of asserting himself. And I think it's those two clearly at the top. I mean, they're the points leaders and such. It's going to take some doing to beat them. I mean, next perfect five week break that seems to be working, you know, two preps kind of for Forte. You know, a lot of it depends on how they're going to handle Churchill. You know, I mean, that's always the sort of the big question mark. And then, you know, we're going to fill in a lot of slots this weekend. And those races are not the easiest to dissect. You know, the Wood Memorial is going to be a really good race. I mean, the favorite drew on the outside, Mid-Show, who was, you know, very impressive winning the Withers way back in February, but he's going to have to do it from the very, very far outside against, you know, a decent group, not certainly spectacular by any means, but, you know, and then Keeneland, Blazing Sevens is a horse that I've kind of liked all along. I do that. I've been a voter on that NTRA poll for a while, and he was a horse that I kept ranking pretty high. I didn't see many other people were ranking them very high, but, you know, the Champagne's always been a race for me that, carries a lot of weight. So I like him. He'll be tough. You know, Chad's good in the bluegrass, seems like, most years. But Tappet Trice has been impressive as well to do the things that he's done, winning at Tampa from that spot position he was in. And, you know, he's going to relish the distance. And, you know, Keeneland, the mile and eighth is a much different race than that mile and 16th race that they run there with the short stretch. You know, and then we're on to Santa Anita, where we kind of have these previously trained by horses and such. And, you know, Tim Yakteen is going to be maybe loaded again. We'll see if he can make it to Louisville with some of those horses.
But, well, Practical Move is, you know, the horse that he's had
is not
day
previously.
One.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
I mean, that's I have not understood why he has not been taken more seriously.
Yeah, no, he's a major player. For
very
sure.
Very strange.
I would think if he were to win, you know, you'd be looking at those big three, which is kind of cool. You know, you get the sort of a throwbacky kind of year where you had the West Coast, East Coast, sort of middle part of the country, main player from those three places that'll really kind of dominate the betting, maybe dominate a lot of the pre-race coverage. And I think it really matters in sports when you have kind of a big name or a major player, whether it be, you know, the NCAA women's tournament with Caitlin Clark. Everybody's focusing on that. You know, I don't think the men's tournament was all that thrilling for the general audience just because of the teams that end up being in it at the end. But if you have, you know, major players like in the Derby, where you have three really top horses, you know, and including, you know, one trained by Todd Pletcher, one trained by Brad Cox, two of the biggest names in the game, going to Louisville. I think it carries a lot of weight in terms of, you know, generating a lot of pre-race kind of buzz and hype, and, you know, the Derby's positioned in such a way that it does really well in terms of generating a lot of publicity because of its position on the calendar. You know, it's after the Masters and kind of baseball's just getting going, and, you know, the NBA, NHL playoffs are just kind of getting started and nobody's really all that locked in yet. But it's fun. You know, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be, I've been to almost every Derby since 98. I missed a couple, but looking forward to it. Should be fun.
Well, Tom, appreciate it, and the coverage. Give everybody a feel for what this is horse racing, yeah. What you got lined up.
Yeah, so I'll be down there, and we'll be having, we do a lot of handicapping leading up to kind of the big days, the Triple Crown days, you know, the Fridays and Saturdays, the Oaks Day, Derby Day, Black Eyed Susan Day, and Preakness Day, along with the Belmont Festival that they have. So we'll have Chapazian. I always seem to do well against him in those days, and I do well against him for about 30 of the 40 days of Saratoga usually. But so we'll have that. I'll be down there, obviously, at the Derby, and then be down there covering it the whole, you know, kind of whole week or two prior to the race. You can go to thisishorseracing.com. We'll have some coverage up there, and as you mentioned, you know, we kind of have Saratoga coming. Just to mention another thing that we put on our website the other day, we put our editorial calendar up there for 2023, our 23rd season, and then we're also kind of on the hunt for editorial interns right now. We joined together with the National Turf Writers. We were able to get a grant from them to help fund our intern program. Us and the Blood Horse were recipients of that grant this year, so we're excited about that. Be able to maybe add a little bit more staff to kind of bulk up our daily product in Saratoga. So if you go to our website, you can find out some details about that. If you know anybody that, you know, is a student that has an interest in racing, maybe they have an interest in journalism, maybe they have an interest in both. But, you know, we've had a lot of interns over the years that have gone on to different careers in the racing business. And, you know, we're not totally, you know, pigeonholing people based on, you know, whether they want to be horse racing journalists. But if they have an interest in it and they can help our product in the summer and kind of represent us well and have an interest in the game, we'd like to maybe foster that and get them on their way if we can. So anyone is interested to apply, send me a note. You'll find all my contact information in the story on our website. And we'll be hiring a good staff here real soon.
What, Tom, in terms of, let's say, you know, this obviously is not limited to, you know, to kids that are young people that are living in the Saratoga area. Will you guys help them find places to stay for the summer and that element?
Yeah, we have done that. Yep. The last couple summers we've had interns from outside the area. We've had several through the years where we try to find them housing, which, you know, truth be told, is really the hardest. That's really the hardest part of the whole job for me in terms of the editorial, intern portion of my my job is finding that housing at a, you know, a reasonable cost, which goes up and up, seems to go up and up every year, limited amount of places. But yeah, so you don't have to be from the Saratoga area by any means to apply. You know, last year we had a guy from Chicago, and another kid from Saratoga. So we've had multiple interns over the years that have been from Louisville or Lexington. You know, I heard Michael Blown mention Fargo. We had Anise Montpleasure from Fargo, North Dakota. She came work with us a couple summers. So yeah, we'll find them some housing, put them up, and they're going to work. You're not mailing it in with our internship, as any of our past interns will tell you, but we feel like it's a really worthwhile experience, great exposure. You know, one of the first things people ask me every summer when I run into people at Saratoga, who do we have on the team? And they want to know who they are. They want to meet those people, you know, because they know, I guess, that we vet them out pretty good, and we kind of have a good eye for, hopefully we have a good eye for talent, and can set them on their way to a career in racing.
Outstanding. Tom Law, everybody, Saratoga TL on your Twitter. thisishorseracing.com. The information there, if your son or daughter, niece or nephew, grandson, granddaughter, etc., somebody that wants to break in, this is about as great a way to do it as there is. So I'm glad this came up.
Yeah, I'm glad too. It's exciting. It's, you know, we get a lot of inspiration from them, and we like to see them have breakthroughs and have you know, real significant contributions, and it helps us, it helps them, and hopefully helps the industry. That's what it's all about.
Beautifully done. Nice. Tom Law, everybody. Tom, I will probably talk to you next live and in person at Churchill Downs.
All right. Awesome. Yeah, we haven't spoken since New Orleans, so I'll be glad. It'll be good to see you and good to catch up.
I appreciate it. Tom Law, everybody. There you go. And from Tom, we'll get into hour three. We got to turn right away to Jeff Franklin and nice tour coming through behind me. That's the little nattering that you're hearing. They bring, it's fun actually to watch here. I've seen it at Santa Anita. Santa Anita, I see kids, children, a little bit more. Here, it's a mixed bag. A few families, but a lot of couples and, individuals touring and...
And we're doing the same thing, helping you
get a feel for what Thorograph is all about. Here's Jeff Franklin. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Great week ahead of us, don't you think?
I would say so. I'm at Keeneland, and opening day tomorrow. Yeah, opening day tomorrow. Bluegrass Day on Saturday. No racing Sunday for Easter. And, of course, in Kentucky, they do let you bet on horse racing. It's only in New York that we can't bet on Easter. one of the craziest. At least Palm Sunday has been extricated from that hell. It's unbelievable. That was my favorite Steve Crist column every year. Steve would write a missive that was mostly serious, but partly also tongue in cheek about the bizarre ruling in New York that we couldn't bet on Palm Sunday or Easter. But meanwhile, you could go buy as many lottery tickets as you cared to.
I love it.
It's just the crazy.
Only in New York, right?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. You could go to a convenience store. You could get those resurrection scratch offs. If you got three Jesuses, that would be a winner.
Oh boy!
Hey now, all right. Try to recover from that. Jeff, let's look back very quickly to last week's Thorograph visit, and we had a couple of good spots. We tried to beat Wet Paint, which ended up being a bit of a windmill tilt. She was too good, but in the maiden race, because we wanted people to look at the maiden races, we did have the pedigree strength. How about the Brendan Walsh? Harvey's Little Goyle sibling running a very good second to Spensive, the Pletcher Firster that was just too good, and I thought we made good use of the full sheets and looking at the pedigrees and those pages last week. Any thoughts about what we discussed?
Actually, yeah. Regarding the maiden race in particular. The Pletcher came out and reminded me of the first time I saw Kobe Bryant on the court as a Laker, who he was all of 18 years old, and you could just tell, oh, this was going to be one of the ones, and Todd's Firster just looked fantastic. So it was a kind of a must use with some of the other horses we had discussed. Absolutely. So we did okay. And this was really a fascinating week for me because as we're promoting Thorograph at the races, we've gotten, I'm so gratified that people are actually contacting me with questions about how to use the sheets, what does this mean, what does that mean? But we're not talking about kindergarten type questions. We're talking about guys that are going for their master's degrees. And basically, the question that I'm getting over and over and over is about approach. How do I use the sheets and approach the races in a way that can set me up to win? And so, in choosing some of the races to discuss today, I don't know what the outcomes of these races are going to be, but I know that the setups are solid and worthy of discussion. And, you know, what's that old expression? Give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. Teach him to fish, you feed him for a lifetime. So let's go fishing and talk about how some of these races expose the sort of thing that I think the Chiefs players have an advantage in day in and day out, and the sorts of setups and betting strategies you can use that, again, we can go for four today. We're going to talk about four races really quickly, but I think the lessons are you know, kind of time-proven, in my view.
Beautiful.
So, I would encourage everybody, if you haven't done so already, just go to Thoroughgraph. There's a green box there. You fill in your email, and within a minute, you'll be emailed the exact sheets that Steve and I will be going over today. And I guess, Steve, have you had time to look over the races? As you know, you're usually so thorough, but I know it's been a hectic 24 hours for you.
Well, I did not look at the Gulfstream. I have the other races, but I did not look at the ones that you found for Gulfstream that is later today.
Right. So, okay, without further ado, why don't I dive in then on Gulfstream and then maybe turn the mic over to you a little bit for some of the Keeneland races. And obviously I've got a point of view on those as well. But so the key in the sixth at Gulfstream today, and it's something that must have come up in the emails that your listeners have sent to me a zillion times, value. And the horse that I'm going to focus in on here is not the fastest horse in the race. It's about the third or fourth fastest horse in the race. But resoundingly, using the morning line as a basis, it's where I have my focus. So let's talk about, so it's for those of you who don't have the sheets in front of you, we're talking about, you know, $16,000 claiming three-year-old fillies, 5.5 on synthetic. The horses that have run the fastest numbers in the race are Another Day Gone By, who has run 14s. She's shortening up from a 14.5 going two turns. She's now going 5.5. Avital Hero, who just ran a 16.25. Omo Ten Girl, another 16.5. And in theory, somebody could say, way back, Angelic Gal ran a 12 as a baby. As a two-year-old, that's a really strong number in the old days. Seems to have taken a lot out of her, and it's hard to project her going back forward to approach that. But we're not interested in that horse. We're interested in the three horse, and forgive my pronunciation, Inquieta. Here's why. Decent two-year-old filly. She'd run a 17.5 on the turf. So you notice in Thoroughgraph parlance, the lower the number, the better. I've already discussed some of the other horses that are 2 to 3 lengths faster on proven form. She comes back as a three-year-old. They tried her on synthetics. She ran a 17.25. At this point, in my view, she was queued up to run the race of her life. She had come back to her two-year-old top. She projected to run a 13 or a 14, which would be competitive in this race, and yet she ran a 22. Well, what happened? She had one of those nightmares at the start. She was totally unprepared. It was an X. Throw the doggone race out. So in my mind, she's still set up to run that 13, 14, 15, whatever she can run, and yet she's 15-1 on the line. It's the classic case to me of Thoroughgraph exposing value that we need to be aware of. Whether you're better to win, whether you're a key boxer with the other two or three horses we've talked about is irrelevant. There's tremendous hidden value here with an easy, easy race to toss. And by the way, I learned a long time ago from some of the old timers will remember, you know, a great trainer named Arnold Winnick. And one time I was watching the races with Arnold in the stands and I watched this horse break slowly. And I said to Arnold something like, gosh, that horse just seemed to be having trouble getting out of the gate. I wonder what the problem is. He says, Jeff, look it. When horses get off behind, they can't push off at the start. Always beware of the horse that breaks slow consistently. They're trying to tell you something. Well, that wasn't the case here. She literally is looking the other way. They spring the latch. She's eliminated from the race. So here's you know, kind of Crafty's lesson number one is let's not be focused so much on just the fastest horse in the race. Let's look at the best value. Here's a contender who, if she moves forward a bit, could be right in the picture, either to win the Doggone Race or to certainly hit some exotics. So, Steve, please comment on what I said wrong there.
No, nothing. I mean, nothing. And that, you know, that is always, when I think back to, particularly when we had, the long-running conversations for the weekend races at Saratoga with Julian and Alan and Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
The most difficult part is not understanding and not not appreciating the specifics of the performance figures and the various notations. That just takes a little bit of studying and just, familiarization. The challenge people invariably have is consistently interpreting the patterns and anticipating what a horse is going to do next. And some pattern reads to me are very personal, and things that you notice based on experience, and others are more formulaic. When you last week you talked about O2X, and
right.
and what that means. There's the phenomena of horses alternating performances. That is one of the
right.
advantages of seeing the numbers presented in a graphing format is patterns make themselves apparent. One of my favorites is the, and I think we've got one in one of the Keeneland races later, what I call the question mark, which is a top, then an off, and then a performance in between the top and the off. Let's say a 2, a 7, and a 5. And to me, that's always a pattern that I'm interested in, and I want to bet, because I mean, again, anecdotally and through my own experience, when I see that, I almost always see a horse reaching a new top next time. So, some of it is, with, and those that read, Jerry's analysis, in fact, he's doing one for this weekend. There'll be a special handicapping offering probably later, probably Friday afternoon. There's certain comments that, as you read those, you begin to get familiar with, which is, and I think this was an Alan, I think this is an Alanism, an Alan Benowitzism, this is a pattern that sometimes results in an explosive new top. And
beautiful.
Right?
Beautiful, right.
But it's not something that, even after all these years, it isn't necessarily a pattern that when I see it, I anticipate it. So this is personal, like any handicapping and bet making endeavor in horseplay. It'll come down to your own individual experience and habit and practice. But one. Not caution, but one advice is to be very open. Don't draw conclusions too readily from just a handful of experiences. This is an effort that requires a horizon view. It's layers and layers of experience and understanding. It's one of the reasons that I think Jerry was motivated to give product away, because he wants people to get familiar and be confident that when they then invest in a package of a day's card or more, that they feel that it's going to be worthwhile because they understand how to use the information.
Well, and boy, this, you know, that's such a great lesson for everybody to pay attention to. And if I were to say, having used Thorograph for 30 years, the number one lesson I would tell guys is, after the race and you've lost, go back, look at the winner and say, what did I overlook? Now, it's, I mean, that's of course handicapping 101 for any approach, but particularly useful in pattern analysis and kind of codifying the things that you should have learned ahead of time and now you've learned after the fact. And those things begin to hit home, and repeatedly you go, I'm not going to let this pattern or this situation or this setup elude me again. 20 to 1, I'm in. And so, yes, Steve, spot on. Couldn't agree more.
There was actually, and I should pull this out, and I will go look for it, because I'm pretty sure I saved the... I'm pretty sure that I saved the race, the chart, and the sheets. And as I've mentioned before, my tendency is to use the full sheet for maiden specials, and I use Thorough Quick for established form. But there was a McPeak winner. Was it last week or was it this past weekend? There was a winner, I think over the weekend, that had run like maybe six straight 13s, and or 13 and a quarter, 13 and three quarters, 13, etc., 13 and a half, and obviously made an explosive forward move into single digits, went from a 13 to probably about a 6.5 or a 7 to win and pay a big price. And you know, typically, like when you see a pattern like that, a horse that's, you know, sitting on the same number, you know, there is going to be a breakthrough at some point, typically. When I saw that, when I went back and looked, I did exactly what you're saying, and that's good advice for whatever kind of information you use, even if it's just straight PPs. Go back and see, what did I miss about this horse? But my problem with the McPeak winner was, even if he moved forward, I didn't think he was going to be fast enough. There were like five other horses that were running figures that were superior. That even if the McPeak moved forward, the other horses were going to have to underperform for that horse to win. But that's what happened. And so having an appreciation and an open mind to the horses that are within range. I mean, listen, we're going to get beat by 30 to 1 shots. I can say, as somebody who watched Julian Weinberg for years, bet nothing but 30 to 1 shots, and Alan does this too. It's miraculous. I mean, they're willing, and you can go 0 for 14 before hitting that 30 to 1 shot. That's what guys who, and contest players, Ray Arsenault, that's what the players who are shooting for the moon, they can miss very often and for days at a time before they get paid. But then when they get paid, you know, it's clean up in aisle six. They've
there you go.
Fixed everything.
There
so
you go.
You have to have a cognizance that there's patterns and horses that you're looking at that say, well, this horse is kind of interesting. You're going to find yourself, if you're on a learning curve with Thorograph, you're going to find yourself saying, oh my God, I saw that horse. Why didn't I bet that horse? And that, I would, you ask me my suggestion, that's my suggestion, that when you see a horse that you have an inkling, that's, oh yeah, and you'll hear people at the track say, oh, that was a sheet play. If you get that inkling, don't be afraid to at least use it as a saver.
You know, it's funny, Steve, last week, a few of us were very fortunate to bet on a horse called Clapton. You paid $44.
There you go.
And I was amazed And I'm thinking, like, I'm the only guy in the world who likes this horse. And some of your listeners and guys who follow along with me, Joe McKay, other folks, were all over the horse. And so, yeah, I mean, that, to your point, that's one winner that provides you with a month bankroll.
And you know, now that you say that, I'm going to look through my charts. It might have been Clapton that had that pattern. That was the Ghost Zapper, right? He had had twos and he'd been alternating a little bit. 2.7, 2.5, yeah. 7, 2.5, 6.5.
He was an alternator. A classic alternator, and you know, to bring it, listeners in the loop, it's a really simple concept. Maybe one of the flaws in the way that many of us approach athletic performance is we assume it's linear. That, you know, what you did yesterday, you can do tomorrow or improve a little bit. So in sheep parlance, it'd be 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2. Many times it looks like 8, 2, 6, 2. You know, when an athlete exerts themselves, many times they regress, we call it bouncing, in their next start, they recover because they didn't put out as much energy in the bouncing race, and then they go right back to their prior top. And, you know, he was pretty classic, and, I mean, the price was unconscionable. It was just, yeah. And, you know, it's amazing. And, you know, I think it's incumbent on all of us to get it set up, to focus in, and then to have the courage to say, look, I was interested in betting on this horse at, let's say, 5-1. He's 2-1. Screw it. I'll move on. I'll wait for the next race. And in the next race, in fact, let's go over it at Gulfstream. It's kind of a classic pattern to me, too. There's a horse, and I realize we don't have all the time in the world, so I'll get right down to it, a horse called Peachy Weechy, who has just got clearly is the most reliable horse in the race to win this race today. Just ran a 7, actually made a slight new top, which might even show more development. There are a couple of horses in the race that have got some back numbers to go to, but they appear to be out of form. And she's 5-1. So as a handicapper, you know, you look at her in the track, you see the odds. Let's suppose she's going out 5-1. You have a classic decision. Do I just take the 5-1 and, you know, try to take the wife out to dinner tonight with the proceeds? Do I get cute with the exotics, etc.? And in this case, to me, you used the word just a moment ago, formulaic. To me, this is pretty formulaic. If you have 10 units you're betting, you bet 8 units on Peachy Weechy to win, and you bet a unit each with one-way exactas from Jimmy Jurekin's Broadway Forest to Palima, just because she did have the 4 way back. I doubt she'll run it again, but I don't want her to light up the board, and I'm going to run second and not walk away with a $60 exacta. So it's kind of the antithesis of the race we just saw, because it just, you don't even have to spend much time on it. Oh, look it. She just ran, arguably at this distance, on this surface, the best number in the race, a reliable number, really good, consistent filly. She hardly ever regresses. She's the most logical winner today. She's 5-1. So there you go. So on the other race, we required some imagination. And in the sixth race, here in the seventh race, it's just, don't look the gift horse in the mouth. Just be prepared. If she goes off 2-1, okay, well, we don't have to bet her. We'll watch something else. But 5-1 is a hell of a value.
That's
your comment?
Yeah, there you go. That's today at Gulfstream, races 6 and 7. And your post time, make a note, 3:08 for the 6th and 3:38 for the 7th.
So, Steve, how about you giving the narrative for Keeneland?
Well, I'm
you looked over these races.
I did look over the races, and the 6th tomorrow here is a second level allowance turf sprinting. We're getting a little bit of rain, and it's going to be cool here. So I imagine there'll be a little bit of just a little bit of give to the ground for those that. You know, I'm a big believer when it comes to Keeneland. You know, this is a sand-based turf course. It's different than a lot of places. Horses that show a predilection and horses that have moved up on this turf course get lots of extra credit. As it happens, we've got one and a horse that might be very tough in here in this sixth race. Coffee Maker comes back for Wesley Ward, last seen in October, winning here, a first-level allowance. He's a horse that's got some tactical speed. From a figure standpoint, from a sheet standpoint, he's fine. He, to my way of thinking, has to come back better as a four-year-old, or she does, better as a four-year-old filly than she did as a three-year-old filly, because there are horses that have caught up to her. That includes Linguistic for Tim Ham, some other horses that are within range, and then most interest is the two. Brian Lynch brings back Frozen Solid. And Frozen Solid spent her whole career so far at Gulfstream. Last winter, three starts to get her career going, then was gone for almost a year, came back in January to break her maiden, and then immediately parlayed that into an allowance win. That performance earned her a six. This is Jim and Susan Hill, homebred, a frosted filly, and Frozen Solid, the two in here, is 9-2. And she comes in faster than the favorite, the 6-5 favorite, Coffee Maker. And I respect Coffee Maker, but I want a key off of a 9-2 shot in this spot, Frozen Solid.
Well, you give a good narrative, Steve. So the story in this race is very simple. Coffee Maker, and look, we all respect Wes. Wesley Ward is top-notch at bringing a horse ready to a race, particularly a race like this. But she is the third fastest horse in the race. She could be 4-5 in here.
Yep.
And the filly you just talked about, Frozen Solid, something you didn't point out, she has no level. 25-17, 12-12-6.
Never gone backwards. Never gone backwards.
Never gone backwards.
Never gone backwards.
And so that's marvelous. And then if you go all the way down, I think you also mentioned Linguistic for Tim Ham. She's faster than Wesley's horse as well. And she's 15-1. So I've got two wonderful horses that I can key off of. And knowing that I'm not tossing Wesley with I expect her to run fifth, but I'm going to be betting against her. With your filly and Linguistic, they are clear bet against for Wesley. That's the story of this race. And it's the great value that we can see just based off the numbers. Wesley is the third fastest horse in the race, and she might be 3-5. Wow.
Exactly. Now, we should use one little tidbit that I you heard me talk about. Go look at look at Coffee Maker, and as I mentioned, I'm using Thorough Quick. If you're looking at the sheets that we sent out, you've got the full page. But look under Jimmy Creed, all right? And under Jimmy Creed, you'll see the Thoroughgraph Index. Coffee Maker is coming back 173 days off, not seen since November of last year, November of 21, then was off almost a year, came back, and obviously, ouchie. So she's run one time since November of 21. Coming back as a four-year-old, and the development, look at the TGI. As a four-year-old, Jimmy Creed progeny average a 13. And when last seen on an average as a three-year-old, Jimmy Creed's run 14.75. As two-year-olds, 17.25. So you can anticipate not a tremendous amount of development. So another strike against Coffee Maker is that...
Agreed.
Right?
Yes.
That the Jimmy Creed...
Yes.
As a five-year-old, I mean, look at Casa Creed, who last night I was at the KTOB Awards, and Casa Creed was the Turf Horse winner. And he's a seven-year-old now, but he got very good at five and six. So Coffee Maker is sort of in this period of development for Jimmy Creed's where there's no guarantee that she's going to move forward sufficiently to win this race. So you got to respect her. She's a use. Linguistic, we talked about. I'm going to mention one other pattern that you should look at. Look down at Tony Granitz's nine horse, Covenant Lady, and you'll see something that is one of those patterns that frequently produces a performance. Had a career best at Indiana last September of an eight, then kind of progressed a little bit in the subsequent last start of the year at Hawthorne with a nine and a quarter. Got 3.5 months off, comes back as a five-year-old mare, knocks the rust off with a 13 and a quarter, moves forward to a 10 and a half. Do you see what you can see in terms of a graphic? You can see a basically a curving back toward a good number. Covenant Lady in here is 30 to 1 and is a horse that could absolutely grab a piece. And if you're a tri or super player, Covenant Lady is a thoroughgraph inclusion to boost your exotics. So if I'm building a ticket and I'm going to key off of Frozen Solid, for me, it's 2 with the 6, 7, 9. And I'm not even afraid, frankly, to include Catalano, the 5. So 2 with the 5, 7, 8, 9. All right, that's my play.
Ready to go.
Yep.
Sounds good.
All right. And we'll round this out with
the Commonwealth.
The Commonwealth, yeah, which seems very, to me seems very straightforward. You got something?
No, I want to hear what you have to say because I'm going to give my my sermon on teaching a man to fish after you're done.
All right, let me. I've got to pull it back up because I did not. I looked at it online. I did not get a chance, and I wrote the numbers on my pages, which a lot of people seem to like to do. So let me get to that, and so I can have them in front of me. It's a very good Bluegrass Day card.
Saturday.
A lot of fun. I haven't even looked. I haven't even looked at the maiden race or the some of the allowance stuff. I only looked at the stakes. Is this with Run Classic? Yeah, it is. All right. Well, obviously, you're going to start with Nakatomi, and at least this one, in terms of Wesley, this is a horse that did get a chance to come back off the layoff in the Tom Fool and ran fine. Ended up third, was kind of making up some ground late, ran a negative one in here on the wet track. Everything pretty much starts with Nakatomi. Get Her Number for Gary Barber has been pretty much a consistent hard hitter type, and you're going to have to respect. Has run numbers as low as a half. In fact, has done that four times without breaking through. Maybe as a five-year-old, this one is ready. If you go look at Dialed In, you know, maybe this year at some point, Get Her Number busts through that half and maybe gets into a, you know, negative range. But I respect Get Her Number in here. And then I went to Run Classic. Run Classic has had top performances, most notably at this distance, at this racetrack. And I love that Brett Calhoun is finally cutting him back. I bet him basically all winter at Oaklawn and Fairgrounds, and he kept getting caught late. And I think that Brett has either learned a lesson or, you know, Tom Durant said, let's cut back. And here he is at Keeneland, the site of his last win going this trip. And that number was a negative 2.25 when he ran that in that spot in October of last year. And then I'll give you an oddball horse. Eddie Keneally has got Pro-Oxidant in here, and this is a bit of a pedigree play. Second off a little bit of a layoff. It's a four-year-old, lightly raced four-year-old. This is probably the best family of Green Lantern stables, the Dam Ender's sister, the good AP Indy mare, and this is the family that produced, among others, the outstanding AP Indian, as well as It's All Relevant, who I want to say Dominic Schettino trained, Ender Knievel, who was a decent horse. This family was very good and fast, and I think you got to consider Pro-Oxidant in here as an exotic candidate. So 2 with the 378 on off the sheets for me.
So you kind of stolen my thunder on one of my lessons, but in my view, the race starts and ends with Run Classic. And the reason why is, just as you were mentioning with the turf course at Keeneland, being a horses for courses type of place, so it is the main track. Not everybody runs well here, and many horses move way up on the main track here. So let's look at Run Classic. Not only did he run, you know, -2, oh my gosh, but that number was profoundly the best of his life anywhere else he's run. Now he's back on his home course, and he's fit as a fiddle. You've got to beat this horse in order to win this race. And he's a fast, dependable racehorse. And so that being said, the race still has great intrigue to me, because there's not one, not two, not three, but five horses who have a similar tail. Go and look at Nakatomi. Look at Heart Rhythm. Look at Hear My Song. Run Classic, Long Range Toddy. They all seem to have a home course love of Keeneland, where they will either equal or exceed their performances on any other racetrack right here at Keeneland. And the other part of the intrigue to me is it's a nearly paceless race. So you can see somebody getting parked 3-4 wide, maybe running the best number and losing the race. So for that reason, I went to the next level, and something that I don't like to get too anal on these sorts of things, but one of the horses that intrigued me was Pro-Oxidant, just like with you, Steve. And I noticed, for those of you that are looking at the full sheets, if you look right under Eddie's name, you'll see 3W, 2W, 3W, 3W. It just shows how this horse, what path they take when they're coming around the turn into the stretch. And in this case, if this horse is going to be looping the field, you're not going to, he could run a zero and he can go 3 or 4 wide and run fourth. Sadly, I can't tell you, I have somebody that I think could sit in a nice tier, wait for somebody to lug out as they turn for home, slip through on the rail and win the race. But I can at least throw up a red flag and say, let's be aware that we want to be very price conscious here, because there are five horses who like this racetrack. And this is not going to be a laydown. Somebody's going to run their tail off to win this race, because there are a lot of qualified horses. I like Run Classic. My second choice, actually, particularly now that Ortiz is coming back into form, I like Heart Rhythm, because he's run almost a -2 himself here at Keeneland. He seems to be in good form, and I think will be a good price. So I think we're seeing the race pretty much the same way, Steve, but I have a kind of a slight nuanced difference than yours.
Well, and I don't know what kind of a price we're going to get on Run Classic, but I'm a fan, and I've been betting him, so I'm not going to. Maybe Nakatomi takes all the air out of the room, but it's hard to believe that he won't be. I don't know. What do you think? Second? He's second choice, isn't he?
I don't have the morning line. What is the morning line horses we talked about?
Well, let me see, actually. I don't know if Nick, I know Nick has done the morning line already, but I don't know if it's
readily
available.
All right.
Let me see. He might, let me quickly look. I just got a fabulous piece of news from a major Mid-American racetrack. I don't want to take the thunder away from them. I will let them either come on the show and announce it, but the timing is auspicious given our conversation yesterday and on Tuesday with Andy Beyer, Pat Cummings, and Maury Wolf. I don't see where Nick. Let me see if he's he did give out some of the lines. Here it is, right there. Bang, boom. Here we go. Nakatomi is 2-1. Run Classic is 3-1. Get Her Number is 4-1. Pro Occident 12-1.
Wow, good price. Mm-hmm.
Hoist the Gold 8-1, Heart Rhythm 10-1, Legionnaire 20, Spankster 30, Hear My Song 10, Long Range Toddy 30.
Well, overwhelmingly, I like Run Classic, but let's see how the race goes. And it's going to be one hell of a horse race to watch. I don't care what happens. So, but hopefully, the lesson to me in this is that always be aware of horses who run their top or show favoritism toward a particular track or surface, and this race has got five of those. So if there's going to be value, I would argue it would be in one of those five where the public might overlook something. And you could even see, now, Long Range Toddy doesn't win races too often, but suppose he goes out 35-1. Why not use him in tries or something? He can still take home a lot of money. And he loves the racetrack, just loves it. So,
lots to like. Lots to like. There you go. Well, there's lots to like about using Theragraph.
And, Steve, in closing, could I just thank again all of your listeners for, and this is not BS now, for really the thoughtful level of emails I've received. This is not like, what does the dark number mean? These guys are asking master's questions. I'm really impressed. So kudos to your audience.
Well, you got, you know, listen, horse players, this is a game that appeals to smart people and people that are willing to work. And if you're willing to work and you got an open mind, you can, ideally, you can keep your head above water. That's what we're all trying to do.
Yes, sir.
And score out now and then.
Well, thanks, Steve, for having me on.
Not at all. These have been great. These have just been so much fun, and I've gotten the same nice feedback.
Perfect. Okay. Well, till next week.
Jeff Franklin, everybody. Crafty JF on your Twitter, and of course, we can discuss this stuff on the Ask the Experts message board. At Theragraph.com. Theragraph, all you need to win. More next week. Let's round out the morning. We got about 10 minutes. I got a couple of things that I should slip in here. How about the pick three that we went over yesterday with Dick? Happy Valley. You're a winner, folks. $148 pick three. 142, pick three. Good job, Dick. So I know that lots of you play them. Well done. And since we're handing out congratulations, we're going to have to congratulate Rich Ang, and we're going to do it next. And poor Seth, I'm I feel bad. We're not getting to Seth unless Rich doesn't pick up. But let's. Let's try to get Rich. I already told you Tuesday morning we were celebrating along with Rich Ang. It wasn't the 70-1 future book bet that hit. San Diego State was, they were in trouble early and it never, I mean, they tried their best to claw their way back in. But it was 18-1 UConn. For Rich Ang, and Rich joins us now. Congratulations, Rich.
Hey, good morning very much, Steve. It seemed like some of the Steve Vick listeners were also rooting me on, and I really appreciate that. And, it was a nice cash regardless, but I give a lot of credit to San Diego State. If people remember how the sequence of the game, UConn was in control for most of the way, and then San Diego State made a second-half comeback, which they had done in the previous wins against FAU and against Creighton. And with about 4 minutes to go, they had cut the lead to five, which was absurd to think about the way UConn was dominating the game and that San Diego State was able to crawl back into it. But then the kid Hawkins hit a beautiful three-point shot from the top of the key to make it to eight. It was almost like a dagger that you could see all the air come out of the balloon because UConn went on a 9-0 run and opened up the lead back to 14. But credit to San Diego State. I cash tickets on them on every single game, so they didn't owe me any money. But congratulations to UConn. And I did learn something which I didn't know, Steve, that was that Bill Murray, the comedian actor, his son, Luke, is an assistant coach for Danny Hurley on the UConn staff.
Yeah.
That was why he was at all the games. I did not know that until I'm watching it.
I saw that as well, and the Murray family shows up all over the place. I don't think anybody's made this association, but when you think about the Stooges, Curly, Larry, and Moe, and the Marx Brothers, there's always a certain headliner, and when it comes to the Murrays, the headliner is Bill, and then there's Brian Doyle Murray, who of course was the caddy master in Caddyshack, who's terrific. But my favorite Murray is their other brother. He's the Shemp of the Murrays. That's Joel Murray, who was unbelievable in Mad Men. He's just fabulous, and he also plays the tragic father in Shameless. But his work as Freddie in Mad Men was just unbelievable. So my favorite Murray is Joel.
As it would with the cuisine angle there, Steve, with you and Tina, loved to go to places, find places to eat, and I still think it's a category book for you to write about the cuisine of racetrackers or something like that.
Well, that's actually it's funny you put it in that term. That is exactly the concept. Now that you say that, that is what I'm sort of pitching. That's funny you say it that way.
Yeah, that's a go in my book. As an author of three books, I think you've got one right there, right in front of you on your laptop.
I'm going to try. What lessons do you suggest, whether it's horse players or sports bettors, what lessons were out there looking back at the six teams that you bought tickets on, Rich? I mean, how can players learn from your success this season, really, not just the last 3 weeks?
Well, I can start with the point that we had talked about on a previous show, but I do like betting futures, whether it's horse racing in the Kentucky Derby or whether it's NBA, NFL, in this case, college basketball. I like betting futures because you can get some ripe numbers on teams and horses that are really talented, and the best time to shop is not when they're on a winning streak. It's when they lose games or a race or something like that, where the odds will fluctuate. Because think about a future book, and if you ever talk to a risk manager for one of these casino sports books, is where they need where they have too much exposure, where they need more money to come in. And so the odds are always moving, they're fluid. And so using the case of the University of Connecticut, they started out the season 14-0. And also another thing, too, is I prefer to watch the teams and to watch the horses with my eyes, because then I don't get gaslit by other people's reviews of these teams and horses. I want to see for myself what's actually on the canvas. And so using UConn as an example, they opened up the season 14-0, and then they started the Big East season, and they started losing game after game, and people jumped off the bandwagon faster than a hot potato. And that's when I bought my ticket on the Yukon was when they were in the middle of a losing streak, because otherwise, you know, you would have gotten a really low odds. 18 is not 70, but it still was pretty good compared to, you know, that 14-0 start when their odds had dropped down to about 10 or 8-1. So, you know, you got to be patient, and you have to trust what you believe and what you see on the court, on the field, on the racetrack. And, you know, the same thing with horse racing, if we make the correlation there, Steve, is that, you know, when you're watching all these Derby preps and you're trying to formulate the, you know, Kentucky Derby future book bets, you know, it's the rare animal that goes through it undefeated, like a Justify or something like that. Usually a horse might stub its toe at some point during the campaign, whether it's as a two-year-old or early as a three-year-old. And, you know, after a horse loses, a lot of people jump off the bandwagon. That's when you want to maybe, you know, jump in and actually take a shot at a horse. So you have to be a forgiving handicapper. You hear that term a lot, Steve. You have to be a forgiving handicapper, whether it's horses or sports.
And you know, Andy Serling makes the recency bias point. And that you drive that point home here as well, Rich, where you know, don't let the recency cloud your judgment. And you used it actually with the exact, you know, opposite approach, which is you saw a team in this case that went through a dry patch and struggled for a spell, and that was the time to jump aboard when everybody else is abandoning them and the numbers floating up.
Oh yeah, it definitely happens. You know, I think the best example I can think of in my Kentucky Derby career as far as jumping on a horse after a loss was, this goes all the way back to Thunder Gulch back in the 90s. But he had won the Florida Derby, right, in a race that I had covered on with ABC Sports. And then his next race was in the Bluegrass at Keeneland, and he finished, I believe, fourth. And the thud was people jumping off the Wayne Lucas Thunder Gulch bandwagon. And if folks remember that Kentucky Derby, Lucas had an entry that went off favorite. I think it was like Serena Song, and I'm trying to remember the name of the colt. But anyway, Thunder Gulch was uncoupled, went off on his own at 24-1. And I still love Thunder Gulch because I remember his race in the Florida Derby and was willing to forgive his loss in the Bluegrass. So, you know, I ended up getting a $50 horse and catching some gimmicks, you know, with I think a Kenny McPeak horse ran second. But, you know, there's a real life example for me, even though I got to go back 30 years to find it. But it does happen. You have to be a forgiving handicapper in horse racing.
Well, I was so tickled, Rich, by this success that, you know, that in a scenario going into last weekend where everybody was, you know, collectively sports punditry and gamblers were, you know, just saying how impossible it was to conceive of this final four. Yeah, Rich Eng conceived of three of the final four, and it was just glorious. So well done.
Hey, thank you. I was the opposite of the master of the obvious. I went the other direction and avoided all the ones and the two seeds.
Well, and that that was absolutely and is actually trending anyway, it seems, this tournament more and more in that direction. So your approach pays off handsomely, and delighted for you, proud of you. Rich Eng, everybody. Rich's Santa Anita Derby Day analysis, racedaylasvegas.com. Rich Eng for Pro Pick. And Rich will be talking Derby next Thursday.
Yep, and before I sign off, I made three future book bets on the Masters that teed off this morning. I'll give the golfers real quick, and they can follow them this weekend, see if I get lucky again. But the golfers I bet were Tony Finau at 25-1. I bet Jordan Spieth, a two-time Masters winner, at 19-1. And I bet Patrick Cantlay at 22-1. So I bet Finau, Spieth, and Cantlay. Hopefully one of them can win the Masters, which would be a lot of fun.
He's unbelievable. Rich Eng, everybody, got to pull up and get out. Jeff Franklin earlier, and the great... we had Mike go blowing, and who am I missing? Talk to you tomorrow.
On Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we